Mini episode 717 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome, everyone, to the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We have with you today one of our favorite conversational guests here, our good friend Joe Stazak from 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia. I have been honored to be on his show, talking with him on various great sports topics. Today we're going to be speaking with Joe about the great success of Villanova basketball. But it's always a pleasure to be able to get Joe Stazak on the line with us. Glad to be able to bring him in. Joe, how are you doing today, my friend? Good to have you back in the FDH Lounge, sir.
Hey, Rick. Long time no talk. How are you? Great to be back. Having a pretty good week here in Philadelphia for once.
Absolutely, yeah. Let's go with Nova here. Let's talk about that. Congratulations. I will tell you, it was a much better ending to the game for you than it was for me. I was in one of these pools where you draw teams randomly at the beginning, and then you can pick up other teams based on who covers in the game. I ended up inheriting North Carolina part of the way through the tournament. That ending cost me 200 bones. I was shrieking at the TV before I turned it off in disgust amidst all the confetti. Safe to say, your reaction, I'm sure, was a lot different than mine.
Just a little bit. And first of all, my condolences. I've taken bad beats. I've been on the other end of shots like that. Trust me, I feel your pain, Rick. But being a graduate of Villanova, and it's been 31 years, and I honestly thought I'd probably never see another one. It's not, you know, Nova's a good program, but not quite top tier, Kansas or Kentucky or Duke or Carolina. But to put another ring in the jewelry box, I think legitimizes the program, and I just think that it's not the David story that it was in 85. It wasn't Goliath either, but they were the number one team for a couple weeks this year, and they really, really, really flipped a switch when it came tournament time, and they had that look, and that they were on a mission, and they were going to do something special. So I was surprised that they beat Oklahoma by 44 points. I think anyone tells you that they predicted that would be lying. But I wasn't surprised that they beat Carolina. Surprised they dropped that 10-point lead with 4 minutes left. But it could have gone either way, to be honest with you. I wasn't overconfident. I wasn't going in with a pessimistic point of view. I thought they had a shot at beating Carolina if they can play the defense like they had been playing. And they really, you know, Jay Wright, to his credit, he got his players to buy in to play defense and to be about each other and be completely unselfish. And they took away Perry Ellis with Kansas, 4 points, five shots in the game. Buddy Hield had 37 in his previous game against Oregon. He had 9 points, one of eight shooting from three against Villanova. And, you know, they outscored Carolina in the paint big time, despite being out-rebounded by 13 points. And, you know, they got Cayunes. You know, they have a devastating, ridiculous bicycle kick in the air, double pump, left-handed Marcus, you know, Page, three-point bomb to tie the game, and all the momentum's on Carolina's side. So you know if that clock goes to zero and it goes to overtime, the momentum's in Carolina's favor. But, hey, they came down. Arch Diacono made the right read, and Jenkins, who didn't have a great game, but he was there when it counted and just stroked it. I mean, it was kind of a very, very fitting ending to a great run.
It certainly was a lot of momentum for Carolina at the end there, and I needed them to cover the 2.5, so I figured if they even got the overtime, my odds were pretty good. As my dad pointed out to me, I still got 100 instead of the 300 that I would have won. But, you know, you being a great broadcast veteran, Joe, you know this. Anytime you at least get a story for the show, there's some consolation in it there. I managed to crack you up with my bad luck, so that gives me something, you know, anyway.
You know, it's funny. We doing the radio business, and I appreciate the kind words, Rick, but the Eagles had a disastrous season. Disastrous season. But you always looked at the silver lining. As bad, the worse it got, the better the storylines. So the silver linings I would take out, I'd be like, yeah, but it's, you know, it's going to be a good story. I would tell my partner, he's all throwing stuff and breaking stuff. I'm like, yeah, but we're going to get a lot of calls tonight, right? He's like, yeah, I guess we'll have a good show because of it. Just the way it works.
That's one element of it. And I have to say, too, and I'll, for these purposes, I will use the PC abbreviation. But speaking of the Eagles, I have to say, some great, great humor that I have been finding recently from your fan base there with the Eagles, this EDP 445 fella. I have just discovered him in the last couple of months. As I say, I'm abbreviating to be PC, but some of the funniest and best sports rants you will ever find out there. That guy is a true original.
Yeah, you're right. It's not really made for radio, but there's some interesting reads there that you can certainly find time to entertain yourself with. And I mean, that team gives you plenty of fodder, let's put it that way. That team has more material than you know what to do with, and they just keep keep churning it out and churning it out. And, you know, with this town, you know, this town could take, you know, positives and turn it into rants. So, you know, either way there, I mean, this town pretty much churns out drama and storylines after storylines. I mean, this whole week, you know, there's Villanova. And then there's, of course, then the Sixers, the interesting exit of Sam Hinkie, and then the Flyer. Not that this, you know, we look for these kind of stories, but Ed Snyder passed away today, the owner of the Flyers and the founder of the Flyers, and it's going to be Eagles draft coming up, and, you know, the Phillies home opener today, and you know, for what it's worth, all the teams pretty much stink, except for the Flyers. They made a run. They got into the playoffs. You know, that's a good little story there. But we're hanging on to little victories. Making the playoffs, you know, playing the Caps, okay. But they made the playoffs. They made a nice little run. It's a little bit of a surprise. But I think Nova was really kind of uplifting for the city, even if you weren't a big Nova fan, because they're kind of vilified in the city. They were one of the big five teams, and, you know, Raleigh Massimino kind of went national back in the day, kind of broke up the big five. I'm talking about Temple and St. Joe's and Penn, LaSalle. You want to throw Drexel in the mix. People still have hostility like 40 years ago for something Raleigh Massimino did. So you either love Nova or you hate him, but I think the people in the middle, the team kind of embodied what Philadelphia really longs for in a team, and the grit, the hard work, and the defense, and, you know, playing together and coming together and playing for each other. And so it gave the city a little bit of a boost this week. Had a nice parade last Friday, big crowd, and just the way they got it done, I think turned some people who weren't necessarily Nova fans otherwise.
Absolutely. Again, and as you mentioned, a great heritage with the Big Five, the Palestra there in Philadelphia.
Right.
With an amazing, great tradition over the years. And there's so much to unpack off of what you've said already about this. But I want to harken back to one of your earlier comments when people were talking about David and Goliath a little bit. Although, as you said, it wasn't really the case. They were a one seed. They're a highly ranked team throughout the year. But for anybody looking at this, and again, and this is sort of an extreme kind of a take, if anybody goes, oh, first mid-major team since Texas El Paso in 66. I mean, where does the Big East stand on the landscape these days? I sort of have a hard time getting a handle on that. It doesn't necessarily seem fair to call them an outright mid-major, but this isn't the Big East we grew up on either.
No, I don't even know who plays in the Big East anymore, to tell you the truth. I have to go back and check. Wait, where's Louisville these days? Wait, where's West Virginia? Syracuse is what? It's completely changed from, I don't know if you saw, there was a 30 for 30 on ESPN, Requiem for the Big East. Just phenomenal. you know, back in the days with like Pearl Washington and Chris Mullin and those battles with Cuse and St. John's and Patrick and the Georgetown teams and Stu Granger and Eddie Pinckney. And I mean, that was the Big East. That was Big East basketball. You know, that was very physical, very hard nosed and defensive style of ball. And with the rivalries and the hatred for the other teams, the respect but hatred at the same time, sports hatred. It's just not what it is today. It just isn't. But you know, hey, Nova still, you know, I guess representing a little bit. And I don't know if you know people from the Big East days or fans of the Big East back in the day maybe can find some solace, because I think it's really, and I get it, it's all about the Bucks these days, but it's just not the same with everyone, you know, basically hightailing it, you know, for the Bucks and changing conferences and just completely realigning everything. It's just not the same. The rivalries have changed, you know, that hatred for that team you were usually used to playing twice a year. Maybe you'll see them in the conference tournament, and you know, it's just not that anymore. It's just not, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Oh, that's right. You know, when you go back to the glory days of the conference, and you mentioned, again, the man who really elevated this program, got the national title, Raleigh Massimino in 85. It's one of these interesting things you and I have talked about previously. Every once in a while when we can find a sort of nexus between your town, Philadelphia, my town, Cleveland, I will tell you, Raleigh Massimino's second act at Cleveland State University went about as well as Jerry Faust's second act in the college game at Akron, which is to say not well at all.
Tell me about what happened with his stint at Cleveland State, because he kind of disappeared off the radar after UNLV, and now he coaches in Florida somewhere. It's, you know, I don't even know what team he coaches for now, but he's down in Florida doing his thing. I mean, that's 31 years ago since he won the title, so he's getting up there in age. How did the Cleveland State experiment go?
This is all hearsay, so I feel bad even saying this, but okay. The word around town is that he was just like blatantly mailing it in. It was just basically for a paycheck, that he regarded it as a chance to sort of get paid in retirement.
Oh,
and
my,
wasn't
really
hitting it hard as far as recruiting or anything else. I mean, that, again, I personally have no opinion one way or another, because I don't know and I'm not close to the situation. But
sure,
that's the conventional wisdom on the North Coast. So, yeah, it's, you know, sometimes, you know, when you get a name, all that glitters is not gold. And we kind of found that out the hard way.
This is true. This is true. I mean, yeah, he rose to stardom, and you know, that's interesting. I'll have to do some checking on that, and I'll have to I'll get back to you on that. I'm gonna have to start digging in on that. I know, you know, he had his stint in UNLV. Certainly, quite a drastic change in personality from the Shark. You know, back in the early 90s and whatever, Jerry Tarkanian. But yeah, Raleigh kind of, you know, he surfaces tournament time, but really he's kind of disappeared from the map here in Philadelphia, but certainly not forgotten. I mean, there's still, you know, a lot of memories and a lot of, you know, every time the tournament rolls around or something on Villanova, you see that shot with him hugging his staff at the end of the game when Jensen got the ball into Dwayne McLean, time runs out on Georgetown and whatnot. But and I was glad to see him. I saw on ESPN on Sunday morning between the games, the semifinals and the title game, that he was back home in Florida taking care of his wife who's sick, and he said he wouldn't be at the game, but he'll be watching it on TV. Well, I turn on the pregame Monday night, and he's sitting on a set right outside of the NRG Stadium. So they somehow, you know, got his butt to the game, and he was a lot more enthusiastic as it went on when he started talking about basketball and they were getting him going. And then as he was in the stands, he sat with Eddie Pinckney. It was nice to see. It was nice to see him back, you know, in the mix. A lot of the guys from that 85 team were at that game, and I had a few of them on my show. I went to school with some of them. I went to school with Harold Jensen and Mark Plansky and Eddie Pinckney. And, you know, so it was really, really fun. And I have them on, you know, when Nova makes some noise and they're in the tournament, and, you know, every year. But this year it was unbelievable, because, you know, now you can make comparisons, that run to this run, and you know, what did it mean for those guys, and how has the game changed and whatnot. It was just a ton of fun right up until that shot.
Yeah, it's always nice to see when you have an old coach coming back and being embraced like that. I mean, I can liken that a little bit to in Columbus these days. I see Earl Bruce really being clamped to everyone's bosom down there. And it's nice because he was in a tough spot following Woody Hayes. Wasn't always
yes.
fully appreciated. But, you know, all people remember later on are the good times, the good memories. He went out on a high note against Michigan. It's good to see Raleigh
yes.
getting treated the same way with Villanova, people remembering that moment and treating it that way. But as far as the arc of the program in the years since, this is what I really want to get your handle on. Because, again, the sense in recent years has been, I mean, we did our college basketball tournament preview a couple weeks ago, and I mean, obviously the one thing that came up with Villanova is, yeah, you know, having a great year, but how many times have we said that before? So, you know, I would imagine that there's gotten to be like a real chip on their shoulder over a period of time that probably had to help with motivation. And, you know, in a sense, they were sort of the team that nobody saw coming, even as a number one seed, because this has happened so many times before. So, what, in your sense, was different about this run and different about this team that allowed them to blow past some of the earlier disappointments that they have suffered in the past and ultimately make it all the way?
You know, it's interesting that you say the team that came out of nowhere. I mean, they held the number one ranking for about 2 to 3 weeks. But you're right. No, I mean, yeah, it sounds funny, but you're absolutely right. People were asking me when they became the top team. It was the first time that Nova was AP number one since they had won the title April 1st, 1985 back then. So it was a little bit of a story, and they hung around until they lost to Xavier towards the end of the season. It was a nice little run. I thought the same thing, though. I mean, people were trying to goad me into talking about Nova and pumping my chest and whatnot before the tournament, or before the Big East tournament. And I said, yeah, I'm going to reserve judgment on this team because – I've seen this movie before, and I know how it ends. So I'm just going to hold off a little bit and see what we got and see if they can get past the first weekend, because they've run into, you know, Mount St. Mary's, you know, North Carolina State. You go back to the Lapis and Kerry Kittle's days and, you know, losing to Old Dominion in the first round as a 3 seed in the first game, and just losing to Cal and Tony Gonzalez back in the 90s. They haven't had a lot of success except for 2009, where they made that run. They beat Pitt. Scotty Reynolds goes end-to-end. They go to the Final Four and then get whacked by North Carolina. So I was like, all right, let's just see. Let's just see what we got here. And I think the combination of you know, this isn't a program that really gets a lot of one-and-dones like Duke and Kentucky and whatnot. So you have a veteran team led by a very good and very very heady point guard in Arch Diacono. And they also had – it kind of all came together. And this team was not about statistics, not about points, not about getting – mine or getting ours. It was about, you know, winning. And one thing that they did I thought was interesting, and they must be brainwashed to or programmed to think like this. They never thought about actually winning games, winning tournaments, you know, winning conferences. It was about winning the play. All right, here's what we're going to do, and we're not thinking about big picture. Win this play, win this possession, you know, do this thing. They talked about, and Larry Brown would have been all over this, you know, talking about playing the right way. And at the end of the game, at the end of the day, look up, see where the chips fall, and see how we did. It was kind of like that. It wasn't about the moment getting too big or the game to getting too big or the opponent. It was playing the right way, doing the things they were taught over and over and over again and executing. Having said that, you can, you know, a lot of teams probably approach things that way. They went unconscious when they got to the tournament. I mean, shooting 71% against Oklahoma and beating them by 44 points. And, you know, they whacked a very good Miami team who was a 3 seed, very good guards led by Angel Rodriguez. They beat them by 23. They destroyed UNC Asheville fine. We expected that, a 15 seed, but they blew the doors off Iowa. You know, after the first 3 games, they had trailed by a total of about 46 seconds in those 3 games. I mean, they just ran away with things. And then, of course, they got tested by Kansas. They didn't shoot that well. It's only 2 field goals in the last 8 minutes. But they hit their free throws, very focused, 10 for 10 at the line. And they played defense. They stopped their biggest threat, which was, you know, Perry Ellis. And then they go to Oklahoma, or they go to Houston, and they whack Oklahoma. The momentum kept building and building. But to shoot like that for the tournament is one thing to, you know, that perfect game against Georgetown, which will, you know, never happen again, where they shot almost 80%. But they shot 58% for the tournament, for the six games. One of them was a 71% percentage outing against Oklahoma. Their worst performance was against Kansas when they shot 40% but made their free throws. They were 18 of 19 from the line, back-to-back games. So they did the little things. And they play defense. And really, when you get to the postseason, in almost any sport, it really does come down to defense. And because it turns into offense, and they really bought in. And I thought Jade Wright did an unbelievable job. I was glad to see him get the monkey off the back, at least advancing past the first weekend. I didn't necessarily expect him to win the title, but just the way they played, and they had that look. You know, once you start getting the confidence, and you can taste it. And I think they smelled it. And they had a guy, Arch Diacono, who had been playing 4 years, at Villanova, and they had Oshefu, who had an injury down the stretch, but he was getting healthier. They finally had a big, you know, and he's not Ralph Sampson, but, you know, he was very smooth and very agile and athletic, and he did an excellent job, you know, posting up against the bigs of the other squad, and just the way they game planned and the way they executed was just, you know, sensational the whole way, and they deserve it.
Well, such a great team in the cohesiveness sense. I wonder to whatever extent, when we look at them in the 2016 landscape, if we look at it and say they were the perfect team for this moment, because when we did our Final Four preview a couple weeks ago with Evan Roberts from WFAN, we were talking about that in terms of this is a weird year in college basketball. College basketball has been dominated over the last 12 years or so by the one-and-dones, the big star
yes.
power players. Ben Simmons didn't even make the tournament this year. Now, Villanova did dispatch Buddy Hield, one of the very few that you could find out there this year. But
yes.
in a year where you didn't have that kind of rampant star power, you didn't have that super team like Kentucky of 2012 or anything like that, it just seemed to be an odd kind of year in college basketball. Were they the right team at the right time?
Yeah, I think so. I do. There wasn't, if you looked and went into the tournament, there wasn't that one team that had, you know, that, listen, you know, at those levels and the McDonald's All-Americans those teams bring in every year, you usually see one of those teams and say, wow, that's the team you don't want to play. There really wasn't one of those teams. If I had to pick, I would have thought, I thought Kansas was the best overall team heading into the tournament. They also have a history, though, of bowing out at the wrong time, not playing the right way in crucial moments, and not really they don't finish like they should with all the talent they get. So I like the fact that they were in Nova's region. You look at Carolina, good team all year, but, you know, they weren't one of the great Carolina teams. They were big. They could shoot from outside, but really they beat you – you know, down low, but it wasn't a team that you thought was a juggernaut, you know, heading into the tournament. You know, you look at everybody else was kind of just, okay. Oklahoma, yeah, you can say that Buddy Hield had some people around him, but it was really about Buddy Hield. And if you could stop him like West Virginia did in the conference tournament, I think they held him to 4.6 points, you can beat that team. And there wasn't really that juggernaut team, like you mentioned, that team, Anthony Davis, that led Kentucky to the title a few years ago. There wasn't one of those teams. And, you know, Villanova, you know, I always say this, the best team doesn't always win. The team that plays the best usually wins, and you just have to, you know, win a game of basketball. You know, play better basketball for those 40 minutes, and just Nova just really put it together. And talking about a team concept and the way a team plays, yeah, they were the best team. You know, at the end of the day, when you look back, they were the best team, clearly the best team in the tournament. And then that shot really capitulated what that run was all about. It was you talk about the perfect game in 85, this is probably the perfect run by a team in a long time because of how they dispatched teams, whether they were higher seeds or lower seeds or they had to face, you know, a top program. I mean, they knocked off two number one seeds, a two and a three. I mean, that's pretty good. That is pretty good.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. Congratulations to your team, Joe, because they proved they were the very best in this tournament. Joe Stazak, thank you so much for being on the show. You've always been a great friend to us. Thank you so much. Look forward to doing it again. Have a great week, my friend.
Hey, Rick, always a pleasure, my friend. Great talking to you. I'm going to have you on my show very soon, my friend. I'll talk to your people, and we'll make something happen.
You know where they're at. You're way too kind. I appreciate it, Joe. You're a great one. Thank you so much for being on with us, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this mini-episode of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.